Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. Hey, guys. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Our next guest is a friend, Adam Morrow. Typically, he's a journalist in Cairo, Egypt. When he writes, it's for IPSnews.net most of the time, I think. Welcome back to the show, Adam. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good, Scott. Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Very happy to have you back on the show. And just wondering, hoping I could get an update from you about what all is going on in Egypt these days. I guess the biggest headline over here is that there's a group in Sinai that has supposedly declared their loyalty to the caliphate. What do you know about that? Anything? Must be big headlines there.
Terrorism is the big word of the day right now. Mm-hmm. Ever since, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago, there was the largest ever attack, or the deadliest attack on security personnel since Morsi's ouster about a year and a half ago. Happened in Sinai, not too far away from Rafah, which is the border of Gaza. And I think 31 or 32 Egyptian soldiers were killed, and an equal number were badly injured. It was perpetrated by, you know, unknown militants. As usual, it's extremely difficult to sort of get to the bottom of what's going on because the only information, you know, comes through the filter of the government. Mm-hmm. But of course, in line with what the government has done in the past, they were quick to point the finger at Hamas and Gaza-based militants. So they've stepped up a lot of the border security. They closed the border completely. Very little is going through the border at this point. Yeah.
Now, why is Sinai so much different than the rest of, whenever you talk about it, it's like a kind of a separate entire, I mean, obviously if you look at it geographically, it is separate, but why is it so different, I mean, than the way the rest of Egypt is living right now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that there's always been a differentiation between mainland Egypt and Sinai. There's always been sort of a security element that was slightly different.
It's like our Puerto Rico or something.
It is part of Egypt. I mean, it's not a separate political entity from Egypt or anything like that. But something to bear in mind also was the fact that it was captured. It was captured by Israel in 1967. And only went back to Egypt again in 79, 80, 81. So it's like the early 80s, I think, or the mid 80s, I think it was all finally handed back.
Right.
So in that regard,
but it never was settled by Israeli Jews, though, right? It was still the local inhabitants kept the land at all that time, or not?
Some settlements went up and were subsequently dismantled when it was handed back. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's inhabited by Bedouin tribesmen.
Right.
That's another thing that makes it different is the fact that it's tribal. It's extremely tribal, as opposed to mainland Egypt, which is more settled. Mm-hmm. Because of the Nile and because of the cities.
It seems you always seem to refer to it like it's mostly kind of a news black hole as well. Like no one really knows what the hell's going on in Sinai.
Yeah, that's never been more the case until recently, until the last year, when journalists can't get access to it and that sort of thing, and you pretty much have to just take the government's word for it for whatever they say is going on out there. Jazeera has managed to get in, has managed to get some footage out. I don't know if you're following how closely you're following it, but they're doing major, major demolitions on the border. They're basically creating a buffer zone
at
between
Rafa.
Egyptian Sinai and Gaza. They're creating a buffer zone, which has entailed the destruction of a lot of local homes and that sort of thing. It's quite a big deal.
Okay, now explain that for a second now about that's the southern border of the Israeli-occupied Gaza Strip there and the Rafah border crossing. And so, but it's the southern border of Gaza is not controlled by Israel. It's controlled by Egypt. And now, so tell us about the demolitions. What all have they destroyed there?
Well, I couldn't give you exact statistics, but numbers are definitely lots of, I'm hearing something like dozens, maybe hundreds of homes are being destroyed. Again, it's very, it's very difficult to get an exact number on it. But you
like
know,
all
it
the neighborhoods around there, basically. And then the excuse
exactly.
is what?
People are being forced to leave the area. Like, I can't remember, like a 500 meter, it might be more than that, it might be a 1 meter or more, a 1 kilometer or more buffer zone.
Now, so this is huge, right? Because I think, you know, it's basically been, Adam, right, that it's, you know, it's a siege, but there's a little bit of porousness to the Egyptian side of the border so that the siege is not total and, you know, people can still do some trading. But this is an attempt to really completely eliminate that, to get rid of any structure where a tunnel could come up underneath a roof where no one could see it anywhere around there.
Right, right. This is all sort of stuff that Mubarak always wanted to do, but didn't have the popular backing to sort of get away with because of the, you know, because the Egyptians in general were still very sympathetic with the Palestinians and with Gaza. Mm-hmm. This is something he always wanted to do, but sort of ran into a lot of resistance for. And now Sisi, because of after the coup and everything else, sort of with the momentum that he's got and sort of the anti-brotherhood / anti-Hamas, you know, sentiment that the media has managed to push out. He's now taking advantage of the atmosphere to like really go in there and to final once and for all to like really, really make sure that border is completely sealed, that siege has become airtight, which is really unfortunate because there's nothing really linking. I mean, nobody's been presented with any real evidence that Hamas or anybody from Gaza was behind this.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
this is typical though. This is like you'll have these explosions that'll go off in Sinai, and a bunch of military personnel will get killed. And the media is usually spearheaded by the media, who will quote these unnamed security sources, will immediately start pointing a finger at Gaza without any evidence, and they'll start taking these draconian security measures and they'll close the border, and they'll start destroying tunnels, and now they're actually making a buffer zone between them without ever really presenting any evidence. And again, Hamas stresses again and again and again that they weren't responsible for this, and that it's not within their interests to do it, which is the case. I mean, it's totally against their interests because, I mean, they want the border to be open, they want relations with Egypt to be good, they're desperate to have good relations with Egypt,
right.
So they're sort of stuck in this. But I mean, to no avail. You know, their objection, you know, their protestations are to no avail, and Egypt just keeps going and like you said, basically cements the siege, basically completes the siege.
Well, and I mean, who knows the future and exactly how the Israelis are counting the calories these days? But I mean, this could really hit the people of Gaza hard. Do you have any kind of ballpark? Have you heard any sort of numbers of how many millions of dollars worth of food and vital goods cross that border or through those tunnels or, you know, were able to up until very recently here?
It was starting to come in dribs and drabs. The thing they need more than anything is cement so they can rebuild the destroyed territory, which has been destroyed now two times. But from what I can tell right now, I mean, nothing's going through, the Rafah border is closed. And it's what's interesting to note is that in the ceasefire deal that was signed on August 26th, at the mm-hmm. conclusion of this last devastating onslaught that Israel launched on Gaza, if you'll notice the agreement was to open Gaza's borders with Israel. That wasn't even one of the stipulations in the ceasefire was to open Rafah, because I kind of get the impression that Hamas and whoever's running the show in Gaza have sort of given up on the idea of ever opening. They know that under the current circumstances, under the current regime in Egypt, they're never gonna get any sympathy. So I think they've sort of given up on even trying to have that one opened.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's grim.
The
Israelis haven't complied yet, and haven't opened up any of their borders. So it's sort of still a status quo. It's sort of gone back to the status quo despite the ceasefire.
Right. Yeah, and of course, the status quo was bad enough, but at least there was some kind of looking the other way and trade allowed through there. And so you could see why, you know, it's not good enough at all, not by a quarter, but might as well, you know, settle. It's better than nothing. And then now they take it all away. Now it's nothing, you know, because they're going to go ahead and bulldoze flat, put a parking lot over anywhere where a tunnel could possibly open up and some goods could be traded through there. That's madness. I don't know if HRW or Amnesty are even reporting on this at all. I guess they don't care about things like that. Anyway, hang tight. It's the great Adam Morrow on the phone live from Cairo, Egypt, y'all. Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm on the phone with Adam Morrow. He lives in Cairo. And, you know, I've been interviewing Adam since 2011 when the Arab Spring started. And he was writing for Interpress Service then. And I've been interviewing him this whole time. And short recap, they deposed the American-backed fascist sock puppet dictator. And they held some democratic elections, and the Muslim Brotherhood won majorities in the parliament and the presidency. And so the Americans and the Israelis, in league with the Saudis and the military, canceled the elections, and they overthrew the democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood government, put them all in jail, murdered more than 1,000 of their supporters in the street, and the next Mubarak, the next mustache in line, as Greg Palast would say, climbed up to the top, Field Marshal al-Sisi, and he's the new fascist military dictator of Egypt under American, Israeli, and Saudi auspices there. And so that gets us pretty much caught up to current day here in the fall of 2014 now. I'm interested to know about how the Muslim Brotherhood is being treated. We talked about how some trade across the Rafah crossing there, black market trade, was tolerated anyway. Same thing with the Muslim Brotherhood. They were illegal, but they were tolerated under Mubarak. Now they're illegal and no longer tolerated in any sense. Is that correct?
Yeah. They've been completely banned. I think they were declared basically in December, last December, almost a year ago. You had another one of these attacks on a police station, with 14 or 15 guys getting killed, I think. And then that attack was subsequently, the responsibility for it was subsequently adopted by a group called Ansar Beit al-Maqdis, which is the one that has since declared its allegiance to ISIS, supposedly. Mm-hmm. They came out and basically claimed responsibility for it. And then even though this other shadowy group claimed responsibility for the attack, the government still nevertheless declared the Muslim Brotherhood, blamed the Muslim Brotherhood and declared them a terrorist organization. Following suit, I think Saudi Arabia had preceded them in that. I think Saudi Arabia had done that shortly before or did it shortly afterwards. And ever since, the Brotherhood has been completely proscribed. And members, you know, members are liable to go to jail, I guess. A lot of them went to Turkey, which remains an ally, which had been, if you remember, had been an ally of the Morsi government. Also, a lot of them mm-hmm. have since gone to Istanbul, and a lot of them have gone to Qatar. Qatar was also a big supporter of Morsi, if you remember. It's interesting because you know that the under pressure from the Saudis, the British government recently were sort of commissioned a report to look into the Brotherhood and see if determine whether or not it was actually a terrorist organization or not. And I think the findings, I think they recently sort of finally issued their findings after which were subject to tremendous political pressure. But I think they finally came out and said, look, we have no evidence that this group is terrorist. You know, their activities have been peaceful and entirely political for the past several decades. Besides, you know, they do work, charity work, and that sort of thing, and social stuff. But aside from that, they couldn't come up with any evidence. To the chagrin of Saudi, which is very much trying to villainize them and make them. And basically, what the effort right now is to try to tie them with ISIS. We talked about this last time a little bit. The idea now is to basically group all of these so-called Islamist groups under the same umbrella, so that even if you've got legitimate ones that are entirely political, like the Muslim Brotherhood, you can just, all of those are sort of being lumped into this one master, you know, Islamist conspiracy.
Just as Netanyahu does when he talks about Hamas, right? Hamas
right,
is
right,
ISIS.
Right.
And ISIS is Iran.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Iran is ISIS, and ISIS is the Muslim Brotherhood, and Hamas, and Hezbollah, and Al Qaeda, and they're all sort of part of this same global conspiracy.
Yeah, even though everything you just said, those groups all hate each other's guts. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it makes it completely illogical. We saw the same sort of crazy stuff in the 18 days of the uprising in 2011, when the regime was struggling, the Mubarak regime was struggling to sort of stay in power. The public media was pushing out, the state media was pushing out all this stuff about how it was this one global conspiracy involving Iran and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda and Hamas and the United States and Turkey and Qatar. And I mean, virtually everybody is out to get Egypt under this, you know, under this sort of interesting worldview that the media adopts here.
Well, now, so here's the thing, and this is something that we were just talking about with Eric Margulies about the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria, and that is that they're old, and so they're out of the fight, so it's a whole new generation now. Hell, skip a few. It's these guys are all 20-year-olds that are making their own decisions now, and in either of these countries now, they're much more the Brotherhood would be much more marginal groups, and it seems like along the lines of my half-joking theory that Bush and Obama both work for bin Laden, and that they actually have the secret mission of accomplishing all of his goals. They're doing exactly what Zawahiri said that they would do. In fact, I had missed this, only found it recently, where Zawahiri, in the summer of 2011, I think it was the summer of 2011, right after Morsi was elected, Zawahiri put out a podcast saying, you just watch, he's going to be deposed. They're going to cancel the results of the elections. The Americans and the Israelis will never let Islamists be elected to power there. Just watch, just like I always said. And then that's exactly what happened. And it seemed like, you know, right, their whole plan was just proving him right, which brings up the question. I mean, this is why he split from the Muslim Brotherhood himself, is because they're a do-nothing organization when he wants a war. And I just wonder how many 20-year-olds in Egypt are going to start agreeing with him here pretty quick if they haven't already. You know,
well,
it's a self-fulfilling thing.
You can imagine if you are of an Islamist frame of mind to see what happened with the revolution, and then to see the Muslim Brotherhood successfully manage to capture half of parliament and the presidency and the Shura Council, and get to successfully pass a constitution in a referendum, to see all of these gains after 30, 40, 50 years of persecution, to see all those incredible gains just sort of undone overnight. In a very undemocratic fashion. I mean, you can imagine that the and then to see all of their friends either killed or locked up, and their sisters imprisoned, and you know, really nasty shit that you're hearing coming out of Egyptian prisons now. You know, the nastiest stuff you can possibly imagine. You can imagine what the young person would conclude in terms of democracy and how useful the ballot box is at the end of the day, because there was already already this sense that Islamists weren't allowed to win at the ballot. But, you know, there was already, even before the coup, there was already this sort of history of democratically elected Islamist governments being overthrown. Like, you had the whole Algeria thing, which led to 10 years of horrible slaughter. And then you had Hamas sweeping legislative elections in 2006. And what's interesting, and I think a lot of people have overlooked this, is what's kind of interesting is a comparison between what happened in Gaza in 2007 with Hamas winning their election 1 year earlier, and what just happened in Egypt recently, because a similar sort of thing, albeit unsuccessful, happened in Gaza exactly 1 year after Hamas won the election. There was also a coup attempt, or there was an abortive coup attempt. There was right. about to be a coup attempt by Dahlan and his men and Fatah. And Hamas actually found out about it before it happened and staged a counter coup. And that's what happened in 2007, and that's why they ended up in possession of the entire Gaza Strip, because they right. got wind of this looming push that was about to be hatched against them.
Right.
So it's very similar to what happened in Egypt. In Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood failed to weather the storm, whereas Hamas was ready for it in 2007. Hamas was ready, and they militarily drove Fatah out of the Strip, and they've maintained control of it ever since.
Yeah, and that one sounds crazy, but everybody can read David Rose in Vanity Fair, the Gaza bombshell, all about that.
Exactly.
Elliot Abrams arranged the whole thing, And as you're saying, they, after winning the election, they still were being conciliatory and had a coalition government with Fatah. They hadn't seized control of the entire Gaza Strip until this Elliot Abrams plot blew up in everybody's face. as you
Right. It's good that you point that out, because what I've noticed is a lot of people who cover the Middle East and a lot of people who sort of should know about that, their understanding of exactly what happened in 2007 in Gaza is very it's sort of happened, and there's not a lot of people don't really understand exactly what happened there. But right. I think it's interesting in retrospect to see how similar what happened was in Egypt, where you had the Islamists basically win an election, and then exactly 1 year later there's sort of this counter push to try to dislodge them, which in the case of Egypt was successful, as you know. The same thing happened in Tunisia, I think, to a certain degree. There was a big push to get Nahda, to knock Nahda out of the equation, mm-hmm. and I think it failed only because Nahda was so conciliatory, was much more conciliatory than the Brotherhood was here,
right.
and bent over backwards, from what I understand. I'm not a Tunisian expert,
so the Americans didn't have to kill him; they just pushed him. That's nice. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thanks so much, Adam. You're great, man.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Glad to be back. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah. That's Adam Morrow, y'all, live from Cairo, Egypt. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.